Welcome to the Free Cities Podcast. My name is Timothy Allen, and this is the official podcast of the Free Cities Foundation. Hello, and welcome to this episode number 130 of the Free Cities Podcast. Brought to you, as always, by our wonderful sponsor, Veritas Village. Veritas Village has a project in Panama, their latest one, which is in the process of being built. And you can own a wonderful slice of it there. Beautiful properties, luxury properties, and a perfect climate for growing your own food. If that's your thing, they're all about independence. If you're not into the food thing, well, every house comes with its own solar or solar and wind system included, because as you know, their goal is for you to be completely energy independent whilst maintaining your modern luxury lifestyle, which is now a reality in this world. Please get in touch with them to see working models. If you don't know it already, it's ecovillages.life/podcast and mention us. That's our link. It's in the show notes too, but please mention us when you have any dealings with them. Well, back to the show. Today's show is a good one. I'm back in the UK. I've been in Morocco for a few days, and as promised, I've brought back some new interviews with me, along with many good memories of my time there. In part of the trip, I was speaking at the Plumia Connect Summit, which is a wonderful little gathering. It's kind of like an invite-only digital nomad slash remote work gathering. Many of the movers and shakers from that scene were there, and I was, of course, spreading the word about Free Cities. Do you know what? I was quite surprised to find that the Free Cities scene wasn't at all well known in that community. However, I think that's about to change, possibly in quite a big way. Obviously, if you're a regular listener to this pod, you'll know that the Digi Nomad and Free Cities Venn diagram share a huge amount in common. Naturally, I thought that many people would have known this, but as it turns out, the majority in the digital nomad space don't know about us over here and the Free Cities movement. As my guest today pointed out in our discussion, he's what I would call a nomad influencer. And when he mentioned Prospera on his social media, not a single person had heard of it. However, I feel that over the next few months, this is about to change. And that may be on account of today's guest. Gonzalo Hall is a very well-known personality in the digital nomad space. He's the CEO of Nomad X, which is a consultancy that works with local governments to build nomadic communities. He set up the world's first and hugely popular nomad village in Madeira. Part of the reason why Madeira is on so many people's radar right now. He's also the president of the Portuguese Digital Nomad Association. And I suppose just an all-round good ambassador for digital nomadism and remote work in general. Now, this was a pretty succinct conversation. I don't actually need the AI to analyze it this week. It's quite simple. I wanted to speak with Gonzalo because he made some really valid points to me off camera about how he thought Prospera could deal more effectively with their current PR situation. Now, he is someone who received, believe it or not, death threats when he was promoting digital nomadism in Madeira. So he's no stranger to the pitfalls of creating something new and innovative in the ecosystem of living together. In this conversation, Gonzalo reveals his prior tactics and how he thinks Prospera could move ahead successfully during this somewhat tumultuous time in its history. This is a great episode right here, especially if you're thinking about a Free City project of your own. So listen carefully. I had my mind changed during this conversation on a particular thing. And as you know, that's not easy. I certainly know it. Anyway, watch this space. And many thanks to Gonzalo for your time. Right, Bitcoin strategic reserve and Nostr stuff from the last 2 weeks. I missed a couple of weeks because I've been on the road in Morocco. Thank you this week to Christopher Albanese. That's our BlackRock dude, isn't it? That's it. Justin Bianchi or Bianchi, Hypno, Peter Young. Know that name. That's our CEO. Marrakesh, Vaultbyte, Crypto Connect. Thank you, everyone, for your donations to the Free Cities Podcast Strategic Bitcoin Reserve. We currently have more than the USA. But then again, they haven't started theirs yet. But it won't be long, I'm sure. But we're doing just fine. Right, let's have some comments as well. Okay, Christopher Albanese. These Free Stater interviews are getting me excited for Porkfest. That's true. Porkfest is the Free State Project festival that they have each year, a camping thing up in New Hampshire. Sounds amazing. I've never been. It's a great event for families, and this will be my first time bringing my wife and son along now. If I can just convince the missus to take a trip to Prague for the Free Cities Conference. Absolutely, you can. If you can't make it to the conference, by the way, we've got a free online Free Cities Conference with tons of brilliant speakers starting at the end of May. I think it's the 26th of May. Just go online. I'll leave a link to it in the show notes. That's the online Free Cities Conference for those that can't make it to the real one. But really, it's very hard to compare the two. The in real life Free Cities Conference is, well, for me, it's the best event of the year, hands down. But then again, I'm a bit biased. But it's a brilliant event. And if you really want to meet people from the scene, and everyone goes, if you're in the scene, you go to that conference. That's the place to be, because it's small enough, it's intimate enough to actually interact with pretty much everyone you want at some point over the weekend. Right, next comment, Justin Bianchi. I'm going to keep saying like that, Justin, until you tell me whether I've got your name right. Talking about Ian Underwood last week. It's just a picture of a cat. I don't know what that means, but it's a picture of a cat anyway. Hypno, there are so many of us thinking similar things about the state, no matter the country. Great episode. That was the Manuel Barkow, the rise of libertarianism in Germany, episode 116. Oh, a lovely big donation there. That's Peter Young again. He's our super rich CEO. He's obviously absolutely rolling in money at the moment. Scott Forte makes a good point about the Libertarian Party in New Hampshire. If you're running for office, it's wise to stay within the Overton window and remember that anything you say can be used against you by your opponent. Once you're in office, that's when you can begin gradually shifting the window in a better direction. I think that's a good strategy. Yeah, a lot of people liked the Scott Forte episode. Justin Bianchi again, about the Scott Forte episode. You're on a roll. New Hampshire is a hotspot for great guests. Next comment is from Marrakesh. Funnily enough, that's where I just flew from. This is someone called Marrakesh, though. And oh my God, it's a very, very long one. I'm not going to be able to read all that out. Let's do the first paragraph. Listening to this now, and it's a great episode so far. Live free or die is New Hampshire actually the freest state with the most liberty-loving Americans? They have the most guns per capita and maybe the most polite as well. Right, and I'm going to the last one. If the federal government collapsed, I've always wondered about what happens with the nukes. So perhaps keeping at least the military for a national defense might be tolerable. The federal government would basically just be a military alliance of the 50 states. Time to now go to the actual content. Let's talk Prospera, people, and PR, the three P's. So you better get your notebooks ready. And in the time-honored tradition of this podcast, please just sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation with Gonzalo Hall. Scene setter is, we're in Morocco. I met you actually yesterday for the first time in a car, and we had a conversation right off the bat about Free Cities. And I don't know much about the sort of world you live in, which I would say is the digital nomad world.
Yes.
But by the looks of it, you're pretty well known in the digital nomad world. Right. Okay. This is good.
A little bit.
A little bit. Okay. Everyone here seems to know you, put it that way, and everyone wants to talk to you. So, but it turns out you've worked in Madeira.
Yes.
You know Prospera. So could you just tell me exactly what it is you do, and or give me a little bit of a history about you, because so that I'm certain none of our listeners or viewers will know.
I think the history that matters is that I built the first nomad village, which is nothing else than I created a project for a village in Madeira Island to attract digital nomads, remote workers, and everything in between. With the government of Madeira. So that was my first project. I wrote a theory in Italy, for Italy, on how to repopulate villages with remote work. They never took the project. I built in Madeira, became one of the most successful projects in the world. It became the blueprint for basically every government in the world that is trying to attract digital nomads. And with that project, I then work with Brazil, and I work with Rio de Janeiro, I work with Porto. So I became famous in my little world. And then I have my company, Nomadex. It basically does consulting plus events plus everything in between. So we want to build this whole nomad space from scratch to...
Right. You're certainly someone in the digital nomad arena who's what I would call probably an old-fashioned term now, but a blue sky thinker, aren't you? And listening to your talk today, you're definitely a blue sky thinker, because you were basically talking about everything that's going wrong with the movement, everything that needs to change, what's good, what's bad. So that's all good. And that I'd love to talk about that. How did you get involved in... So, for example, you said that you created a blueprint for a nomad village in Italy, but it wasn't taken up. And then you implemented it in Madeira.
Yeah.
Okay. So why did you do that? Who commissioned it to begin with, and why didn't the Italian government go for it?
Well, I did it before the pandemic, so back then it was not so fashionable, and people don't fully understand the power of remote work for moving people around. It's much easier to understand now. Everybody knows about it. Why did I do it? I am a digital nomad for 8 years, and I really get passionate about community. So I went to Bali, not because Bali is beautiful, but because there is a really strong community in Bali. I went to Chiang Mai, not because Chiang Mai is beautiful, I don't even like it, but just because there is a big community there. So I understand this trend that I don't go to places because of the places. I don't really care, like to a certain extent. I go there because my people are there, the community. So when I built the blueprint for the Nomad Village was, how can we create a community from scratch that will then just make this one of the hubs for the digital nomad space and for digital nomads? And my theory was, we just need to build a community. We start with 5 people, 10, and so I was right. First day we had 25 people. Third month, May, we had more than 2,000.
Wow.
And this was during the pandemic. So it was like, just exploded. And the reason why Madeira government took the project was because it was already during the pandemic. I met them in the end of the first stage. So I think September of 2020. So the pandemic started in March. And now everybody was speaking about remote work, digital nomads, and Madeira was empty. Madeira lives on tourism, and it was empty. And so I met the Secretary of Economy on one of my conferences. I was doing an online conference about the future of work, literally called thefutureofwork.co. And I told him, like, you guys are no idea. Like, you have this beautiful place. I am Portuguese. I didn't remember how beautiful Madeira was. And you are missing out, like these nomads, these kind of people, they stay for 2 months, they spend a lot of money, they work remotely, they can work from anywhere, they could just come here. This place is beautiful, has better infrastructure than Bali, Chiang Mai, and everywhere I was, but nobody knows about it. And they are crazy. And so they believe me. I was just a guy with t-shirt and shirts, and they believed me. They paid me to go and to implement the project. It was a pilot project first, 5 months. It became huge right away. And yeah, then I spent almost 4 years there building the community, building the infrastructure, dealing with the media. And yeah, basically it's a regional government, meaning they have some autonomy. It's autonomous regional government of Madeira. So I didn't answer to Portugal, I answered to them. So we had a certain degree of freedom and craziness that the national government doesn't have.
Yeah, we Peter Young, our CEO of the Free Cities Foundation, was involved in Free Madeira. And it was quite easy for them to get access to the highest people in the island. They went pretty much straight to the top, and they went on a couple of trips out there. Peter said it was very funny. it was very DIY what was going on. But you obviously know the Free Madeira a lot as well. Let's talk about the community there though, and what was actually built. What was the digital nomad? What was the nomad village? I mean, what is a nomad village? I don't think I've ever been to one anyway.
Well, I created it, so there are not many, but the whole idea is it's a community above everything. So in terms of infrastructure, we just used an empty room from a cultural center that was already there, and we built a co-working space. That's a co-working space, it's an event space, it's a hub, you know, it's like a HQ for the community. And that was it. We didn't build anything else. Everything we did then was with the locals. So we did workshops for the accommodations, hotels, Airbnbs, on how to welcome nomads. We did workshops for the restaurants, because 25% are vegetarian or vegan, on how to cook vegan food and vegetarian food. And we had the nomads going there and helping them out into adapting the recipes, because they never cook a vegan food in their lives. So it was much more about adapting everything that was there to our community. And with them, with the community manager full time, with building events every day, we built one of the strongest communities in this space. Up till today, I'm not there, it's still running. So it got so strong that it doesn't need my leadership anymore to be there and to run. We have community managers, NGOs were created to manage everything. I don't have to do anything. But basically, we just took over a village that was there, that was super seasonal in terms of tourism, that had some infrastructure in terms of accommodation, etc. We built a co-working space, but we built a new society above everything. So daily events, we built the biggest party in Madeira, is still ours, the Purple Friday, 600 people every Friday.
The biggest what? Party?
Yeah. So yeah.
What did you call it?
Purple Friday. So it's because it's a sunset party, it's a sunset event. We go from 8 to 11:30 only. And it's in this hotel, four-star hotel in front of the ocean, the best electronic music in the world, guys that played everywhere that you can imagine, go and there and play. It's a free event, invitation list, and we divide half locals, half nomads, always. So it's by guest list, and it's massive. And it became a meeting point, and it just became the blueprint the event for the whole island somehow. I expected it to be a workshop, end up being a party.
So you didn't actually own, or the village doesn't own anything.
Zero. Everything is from the people.
Now that's interesting, because the reason that I wanted to talk to you is because we had a really fascinating conversation in the car for 3 hours about everything that you think Prospera is doing wrong.
Because,
and I'm definitely on your side about the fact that I think Prospera's PR campaign is I suppose let's call it suboptimal. Yeah. You know, I wouldn't necessarily say I'd do a better job. I'm almost certain you would. But let's talk about that, because Prospera is within the Free Cities sort of ecosystem, is one of the flagship projects. Obviously, because it's so ahead of its time, it's going to be taking the flak for all the problems that could ever arise are probably going to be seen in Prospera first. And we are now seeing that. So, I mean, everyone that listens to this pod understands that the Honduran government are now rescinding the law, which allows the ZAs to be there. And what everyone probably knows as well is that Prospera has been used as a bit of a punching bag politically for quite a few years now, and it's become a very contentious place within Honduras, apparently. I mean, I'm not even 100% sure that, for starters, most people know what it is, but if you were to go to YouTube and type in Prospera, you'll see a number of videos now. Most of them come in on the controversy edge. So, and that's what I'm going on. And that doesn't necessarily mean Hondurans. These are the outsiders that go and visit. And as far as, you know, Prospera goes, really PR is one of their major sources of basically retaliation is the wrong word, but just, you know, They need very strong PR, because it's really a battle of PR. So tell me, firstly, what you know about it. And yeah, what do you know about Prospera so far?
So I've learned about Prospera through one of these videos. So it's around MySpace. So I heard about it before around the network state, network and people, but I never have actually dig deeper into it until 1 month and a half ago. And when I learned about it was because of the Yes Theory video. I love Yes Theory. I follow their videos. they did a very good video about it. They tried to do the pros and the cons, and they figure out that it's very hard to figure out the cons. It's a lot of PR problems. It's not necessarily a structural problem of Prospera. And with that, I just started to dig deeper. And somehow the head of growth contacted me at the same time. And so I started speaking with them. So I had some calls with them. I will go there in the near future as well. So I'll be there and I will be doing something. I want to learn more. I want to be there. I want to help them out with my experience. And so that's everything I know. I know that what they're trying to do, I think it's a moonshot. I think it's incredible. I know the impact they have, the positive, the possible negative. And I went through the same. So I understand their challenges. I was not in the Central America. I was in Europe. But I was in the middle of the storm against digital nomads in Europe. When we start to see signs in Barcelona and Lisbon against digital nomads, I received death threats on Twitter from the left wing in Portugal and many people from the left wing about my work. And so I fully understand what they're going through. It's different. It's a different project. I think their project is much more incredible because, like you mentioned, I have no ownership about the village we built in Madeira. I have nothing. So I was a consultant. I built it. And once the government said, well, it's done, we don't need you anymore. We don't need you anymore, goodbye. Prospera is different. Prospera will stay there because they're building it. It's from us, by us. And I think that's very, very powerful. So it gets me very excited. And I definitely, once I was studying it, I understood all the challenges. I started to ask questions. I saw all the videos that you could see. I saw all the marketing, all the podcasts. And it just... yeah, it can be done better in terms of integration. I think one of their mistakes is the local integration because they're doing an amazing work. They're giving jobs to a lot of people. So it's a big net positive for Huatan, huge net positive. They just create jobs. They are bringing innovation to a place where innovation was not happening. Huatan was mostly, they would just receive cruise ships, some tourists, but it was not huge. I never heard about it before, actually learned about Prospera. And now Huatan is in the mouth of the world, is attracting a different kind of tourist, is creating conferences, events, and trying to create something from scratch. We saw in Madeira that the economic and social impact it can have, it's huge. But we also saw that it will backfire sooner or later. So you have to protect yourself for the future when it will backfire, like it's backfiring now, like it backfired with us. And when we had a strong backfire in Portugal, what happened is that we had protection. And our protection was first the locals. The locals were the first ones to say, no, this is good for us. This is business. They are here. And the TVs tried to go to the streets and interview people from Porto. So what do you think about these nomads? Like, yeah, they are amazing. I really like them. Oh, but are they rising the prices of the houses? No, they stay on Airbnbs. Not really. It's okay. So they tried to find controversy. But because we work in close partnership with the local businesses and then with the locals, therefore with the locals, they couldn't. It was very, very hard for them. We have one bad article, and she really tried, in 4 years, through all the storms against digital nomads in Portugal. And then we had the political side of it. Politicians move by votes, let's be honest. Their only goal is to win elections. And usually they want to do some good in the middle, ideally. Their only goal is to win elections. We were lucky we had a visionary president. We have a lot of stability in terms of government in Madeira, so they can think a little bit more long-term. But the truth is, because we did it with the government and because the locals were happy, the government is happy. They will never go against the people, never. And so imagine, let's put it to Prospera. If Prospera works more with the local business will be the first ones to defend. The government wants votes and is using this for votes. If everyone, let's say almost everyone in Huatan likes the work that Prospera is doing because they're interconnected, they know about it, Prospera, people go to the parties of the local people. They go to the local businesses. They organize parties together. They organize events for them. And they are doing much of this, the education side. They're doing incredible work. Just nobody knows about it. And they're not so integrated. If they did that, the locals would be the first ones rooting for them. Because the truth is, if Prospera is gone, 1,000 jobs are gone as well. It's not good for anyone in the island. It's crazy. Economically, it makes no sense. How the hell there are still people believing the story that the media is telling and why? And it's just because the locals are not with them.
Well, like you say, they're believing it because no one knows any different.
Yes.
And the narrative, you know, the most common sort of nationwide narrative is these people are stealing our land, they're stealing our sovereignty. And it's very easy to debunk that. Very easy to debunk that. But you know.
But it cannot be them. That's the thing. when was Madar? It was not me saying nomads are good. It was the local businesses. It was the local government saying, no. Imagine the, I'm sure there's a local government the whole time, but it was the local government of Madar said, you're crazy. These guys are really good. We need more nomads.
So, yeah, right. The difference there, I suppose, is, and I didn't realize there was such a big backlash against digital nomads in Portugal. I thought it was tourism in general. Like the Spanish example of, I think, Madrid, people squirting people with water guns and all this kind of stuff. Is that what you're talking about? Was that all kind of wrapped up together?
Portugal was more calm, but we have the left wing promoting, doing a whole campaign against digital nomads, golden visas, and rich immigrants. Portugal is a fun country. So we have the right wing, it's against poor immigration, but they are pro-rich immigration. But we have the left wing, which is against rich immigration, but it's super pro-poor immigration. And these people are always fighting, but the whole left wing billboards and everything was against digital nomads. They start painting the streets, go away digital nomads and things like that. The same as in Barcelona. In Barcelona, they became smarter somehow and they start to attack mass tourism at the same time, although most people live on tourism, but they understood, well, digital nomads, they are like, let's say 100,000 per year in the city. Tourism, they have like 10 million. I know the numbers. It makes no sense. In Lisbon, even though the math doesn't make sense, people were attacking digital nomads like in the same package of golden visas, in the same package of mass tourism. And honestly, in Portugal, most people don't understand what is a digital nomad. So we still have a lot of work to do. The ones who understand are pro-digital nomads, but the left wing, they see rich people moving to Portugal. And as we know, these nomads don't actually move to Portugal. They spend 2-3 months in Portugal. So the whole narrative doesn't make sense.
Unless... I mean, I think a lot of the stuff that I heard was to do with the price of accommodation. Sure, they're not buying accommodation, but they are renting Airbnbs, which in that, so people are incentivized to buy Airbnbs to rent out. Isn't that the kind of theory?
Not for nomads, yes, but not for nomads. Imagine, let's say, I don't know the numbers, but usually from the best perspective possible, the number of nomads compared with tourism is 0.1%. And I'm talking being super optimistic. We are talking about 0.1%. Are we blaming the 0.1% on people investing on Airbnbs? We pay less than tourists for Airbnbs. So if you go to Airbnb and you put 1 month instead of 1 week, there's a high chance you'll pay the same for 2 weeks than for 1 month because we have monthly discounts. And that's the only reason we still go to Airbnb because there is a monthly discount. We don't pay $100 times 30 days. Usually there's like 50% discount for monthly stays because there is no check-in, no check-out, etc. So yes, we do use that infrastructure, but we have been using it since 2015 in Portugal and never was problems. So what happened in Portugal is very, I had to research so I could avoid more death threats in the future. And it's a whole mix between, we lost 100,000 houses for Airbnb, true, that were residential, that now Airbnbs. Many were rebuilt. We had many abandoned houses. So I'd say 1/4 for rebuild, but still many houses went from residential to Airbnb. Yet our construction rate is 95% down compared with 2007. So there was 2008 crisis. Many construction companies went bankrupt. The legislation in Portugal is very hard to build. It can take 2-3 years just to have the approval to build. So we know the housing crisis. So it will take 2-4 years to start building just because the legislation and all the processes. And then we have literally pension funds and Vanguard and others buying real estate in Portugal at 300 million, 400 million at a time to put on Airbnb as well. And that's a huge problem. I have friends selling a house in Portugal. They got guys with the suit and the bag saying, well, this is 150K. You want it? Sure. So just like that, because it's for just renovating, put on Airbnb and sell in the future. So we have a huge amount of houses owned by private equity from the US that just invest to put on Airbnb. All this together is a storm. Portugal is not actually gaining population. We are fine for the first time in many, many years. We maintain the same population due to immigration. Immigration, not digital nomads. And then if you look at the numbers, the number one country immigrating to Portugal is Brazil, not digital nomads. And digital nomads would be maybe UK, and that would be like 5,000 people. Hard to blame 5,000 people or whatever that are renting houses in the whole housing crisis. That's not just Portuguese. It's almost global. It's European. It's in the US, Canada, Estonia. We have here Paulus from Estonia. He just mentioned there is also a housing crisis in Estonia. There are no nomads in Estonia. So it's way bigger than that. We just, I think people need someone to blame. And if you're rich, it's the poor immigrants. If you're poor, it's the rich immigrants. And if you are smart, you would try to see what's really happening.
Going back to Prospera and the similarities between what you could envisage happening in Prospera and what happened in Madeira. When you did, how did Madeira as a whole benefit from the digital nomad village that you created? Was it very easy to see, or was it like a speck in the ocean of?
Yes and no. Yes, it was easy to see some things. It became more international, and even the tourism changed. So before, Madeira had more like a more older tourism. When we started, some friends said, "I don't want to go to the place where my parents and grandparents go." I was like, wow, that's bad. And now it's not like that anymore. Now we have a lot of young tourism. So even the demographics of the tourism change with this process. But the first thing is people are spending money in the low season. Nomads don't go in the high season. We want affordable housing as well, like everyone else. So we go more in the low season. Usually the high season of nomads in Madeira is literally the winter and until May, late May, then people start to come to mainland Europe. So with that, we gain more money in the low season, and we spend money locally. There is new co-working spaces, new cafes opening. There's a whole economy that supports digital nomads that for us is very important. Outside, one of the biggest co-living brands opened there. So we brought investment as well. What's really cool is that Deloitte, from all people, that they don't really love remote work, but they released a report on what happened with investments in Madeira. And we raised on almost 80% the number of new tech companies registered in Madeira on the time of the project. Because you go there 1 month and you learn about it, but then you learn that it's actually a very good place to start a business. The taxes are as low as 5% if you invest there. There are some conditions. So then you're like, oh, wow, I have a company. I should just put my company here. So you go through the process, learn about it, end up opening a company there. So we actually brought a lot of visibility to this that already existed. But then people started to come, started to learn about it when they were there, ended up opening massive companies there. We attracted millions in taxes because we moved companies there as well. And what's happening now is this. Yes, some people bought houses, which is really cool. But we have so many people now wanting to start more startups. We have a whole Bitcoin community and crypto community just exploding and trying to do things there. It kind of became an innovation hub, which was not. Before, we had locals from Madeira leaving Madeira looking for this social dynamic. They go to Lisbon, they go to Berlin, and now they are coming back because they can find it in Madeira. I have, in Purple Fridays, ironically, I have so many people reaching, coming to me and thank me because they came back to Madeira, because Madeira is now an international hub. Like, they can meet people from all over the world. So it goes everything. It goes from the investment side to the money in the economy, to new people, international people, to even the locals wanting to come back after immigrating because now Madeira is interesting to live.
And you can see a similar model could work in Prospera.
100%. Prospera is even better in theory. That's why I'm so excited for Prospera. When I learned about it, is that they are actually building. They can do everything from scratch. Like, I cannot control the quality of Airbnbs in the market. They can control the quality of accommodation. There's a lot of things that I, as a consultant with the government, could not control that they can. They can control the experience. I had no control besides what I built. They can literally do everything from scratch. They have a beautiful place. They have buildings that they can build. They can build from scratch. Yes, it's a challenge. The timelines are much bigger, but you can build everything from scratch. So everything can work the same. And the secret sauce is both the local context. You need to integrate, or else it's us against them. You will never win that battle with the locals, ever. You need to be part of them, whatever it takes. And that can be by organizing events with them, in their place, going to their parties and being part of them. But it's also bringing them to the space.
One of the problems I think that sets Prospera apart from Madeira is that you have this kind of neo-colonialism angle, which is very difficult, a very difficult one, actually.
Yes.
I think with Madeira, you're seeing Europeans move to Europe on the whole, yeah, or even South Americans coming to Europe. You know, people don't really see it through that lens. And take, you know, Prospera has a village right next door, Crawfish Rock. It's called, it's a little fishing village. And it's almost, I would say it's impossible not to piss some people off there. That is impossible. And so there are going to be disgruntled people who, quite honestly, and I might even be one of those people, I probably would, don't want a big thing being built right next to them. They live a very simple life. And the economic argument isn't enough. If you live on the beach and you're happy, you're fishing for a living and stuff, the economic argument doesn't necessarily work for you. It might, and I think for a lot of people it has. But when you see journalists come in to Roatan, they always go to Crawfish Rock. They always find the same people who are talking about it through that lens, which, and it's true. It is true what they're saying. They're not lying. They are reporting on people. But when you actually listen to what they're saying, it's all, we fear this, we fear that. You know, the fact that you could say 100%, well, or that it might be written in law that those things aren't going to be taken, no one is going to expropriate that land, et cetera, it doesn't really matter in those situations. So how would you deal with that situation, the kind of neo-colonial one? And does it matter that there are some people that will always hate the project?
I think if you're building something big enough, you have haters. That's when I got really shocked when I started receiving death threats and all the hate, but I understood actually through Peter Levels that, okay, damn, I'm big enough now and you have to deal with this now. So for me, it was very shocking. I took it very personally, but then I understood it's just internet people hating other people. It's okay.
Was it Madeirans or was it just random?
No, Portugal, mainland Portugal, mostly. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Madeirans, I receive people that like, people that don't like, and that's okay. And everybody has a voice. It's very political there because there's a big party that has a lot of ownership and there is a lot of small parties. But what I figured it out is that you can never please anyone, but you can tell a better story. And when I hear a prosperous story being told by them, it's a lot about this big vision of building a city from scratch in the beautiful Honduras. Okay, it works for the state network community, network state community. I would tell a different story because what I see is like it's a project that is attracting millions to an island that was flooded with unemployment, where there were no opportunities, where the only job was tourism, and they are bringing jobs, they're helping people starting companies. That's a much better story to tell. I was thinking this morning about this, and it's a lot like when the factory opened in the rural Portugal, and they need people, they need to hire people, let's say 1,000 jobs, which is the case in Prospera. They have to go through a whole PR saying they are good, even if they are polluting the rivers, even if they have to do a whole PR, we are good because we are attracting jobs. And it's a lot of that. They need to build a better story. And I think the story is not, we are building a startup city in this beautiful island. I think that's scary. I think a better story is we are bringing the best people in the world to this island. We want to integrate the locals. We want to educate the locals. We want to make them work with us. We want them to start companies. And then you can have a better story to tell. I think it's much, I understand that for certain parts of the community, that's very interesting to hear this big vision. I think for the world, what the world needs to hear is what they're actually doing, which is so much better than the story they're telling. They're literally bringing millions for that island. They are bringing jobs for that island that it needs jobs. Like Honduras is in deep economic crap right now. And yet the story that comes out of it is this big city, these millionaires are trying to take over Roatan. So
the funny thing is, because I visited Roatan, you know, early on, and I never heard the story that it was a startup city being built. This is pure hearsay anecdote, but I get the sense that it may even be that it's the people reporting on it that are saying that. Even the people that are pro Prosper. I remember one of the first sort of first times I saw anyone reporting on it. It was Reason, which is a libertarian magazine, and they were sort of reporting on it as a libertarian utopia, which sounds quite good to libertarians because it kind of is that there's a libertarian ethos behind Prospera.
Yes.
But that itself then creates all this extra media, which is libertarian utopia. Like if you're not a libertarian utopia sounds like a complete nightmare. And if you're a communist, it sounds like a terrible idea. but you know, like, how do you expect to deal with that kind of stuff? Because, I was a journalist for many years, and journalists love a good hook. And the hook with Prospera is either libertarian paradise, tech billionaires who want to avoid tax, and then, you know, if you're in the left, really left-wing media, it's the colonialists, the new colonialism, you know. And but if you're someone like me, it's like I'm a free market person. It's like, you know, this is a phenomenal opportunity for the majority of people who want a better standard of living. And even, you know, the way I would always sell a place like Prospera is, look, Prospera is about Prospera will eventually build a hospital there. It's a new place. What do you think they're going to limit the number who can use the hospital? It's a free market. If you live next door, you're basically going to now be close to probably the best hospital in Honduras. You know, or they'll have water supplies now. They'll have renewable energy, which will almost certainly be too much for their. You want very, very cheap energy next door. You know, these are all the obvious ways that this thing. But I think it's always with a project like that. And I'm comparing and contrasting with your Madeira one here is it's got such a life of its own because it's so big. You know, in a way, the Madeira story is relatively simple and easy to digest. And you can try and control the narrative. But like I say, the thing that you did, which was obviously the absolute correct thing, is you went in and you focused almost, by the sounds of it, 100% on the community.
100%, yeah.
Right, okay. And obviously Prospera aren't, because they're building a city as well. But in hindsight, it should have been done right from the start with someone whose sole job was to deal with the community. You know, like we talk a lot on this podcast about how do you protect a free city, because they're always under attack, because they're different, because they're independent, because all these things. And I've only ever sort of come across three ways you can do it. One is the legal protections. Prospera has those. But even that's turning into a PR disaster now, because yes, they're being forced to sue the government. And I saw that in the latest bit of stuff on YouTube. The tech billionaires are now suing the government for more money than exists in Honduras.
Trying to bankrupt Honduras.
Right, exactly. No, they're not. This is what they have to do to... Right, okay. So you have that one, which is already backfiring. Then you have the relationship with the government. So you have to keep the government sweet, presumably through taxes or whatever. You know, it's like, if the government are on your side, you're okay. They've got that problem. The government changed. They happen to be communists, pretty much. So they don't really like what's going on. And then the third way is locals. And after talking to you, I've realized the locals and the government one are one and the same. In a way, because if the locals are cheering for this place, then probably by default, the government will.
Of course, it's jobs, man. It's like, it's the core basics of humanity and it's the core basics of government. So what really matters is the locals. We were, now looking back, we were protected because the locals were with us and the government was with us. And ironically, the local government, so we had the local government from Ponta do Sol and we had the regional government. The local government was from a different party, so they were not really with us, but they were also not against us because they benefit massively from it. But they also were opposition from the government. And so we had some local problems with the government, with the local government. But because we were protected by the regional government, we were protected by the media, we were protected by the locals. And we spoke always first with the local businesses. So what I understood as well is that it's not me going to speak with the person in the street. It's us explaining the project to the local businesses on how they can win. Because the local in the street is not approaching me. It's not approaching the white guy. I'm actually Portuguese, but it's not approaching the guy from the outside. They don't trust me. They're approaching the person from the cafe. They're approaching the person that is delivering the water. And they are the ones telling my story to them. They are the real opinion makers. So the first thing we did, not even knowing, was actually we did all these workshops for the local businesses. We invited them for cocktails. This is what we're doing. This is how you can make money out of it. This is how you can adapt. This is what we need and we don't have in Madeira, like the case of the vegan, vegetarian food and everything. And then,
really? Yeah. And then vegan restaurants opened up.
Dude, we have an incredible restaurant called Steak and Sun, which is in the center of Ponta do Sol. They have now some of the best vegan food in the whole island.
And so you told them, look, a wave of vegans might be coming here. I suggest you open a vegan restaurant. And they did. And
no, it's a steakhouse that now has 25% of the menu is vegan. It's a steakhouse. They have like a tomahawk. And then on the side, you have like an amazing vegan curry.
Really?
They adapted because they are smart. They're business people. They open a restaurant. And so they understood the opportunity. And so when Nomad started coming, they adapted right away and they understood. And they are still today, they are our biggest defensors with everyone in the community. And it goes up to the politicians, because the politicians, we go to the local businesses, how are things, what can we do better? Oh, we love the Nomads. Okay, we don't touch that. And so we became protected by the local businesses, and local businesses are the ones pushing us as a good thing for the local community because they have the trust. They're part of the community. So it cannot be me, it cannot be Prosper saying we are amazing. Claps to you. It's actually, they have to work with the local businesses, and the local businesses have to, if it works out, if they believe it, they will tell the locals. So it's not even B2C directly, it's B2B2C.
Yeah. It's the I mean, what's interesting about Prospera from my perspective is digital nomads within the kind of free private city space, which is what Prospera is. I know it's either a charter city or a private city or whatever, but in that space, digital nomads aren't particularly concerned about, because you're so small and because you don't stay. You know, like, we always think of nomads as people, often like some of the first people to arrive in these places.
Yes.
But really not very good for business because they don't stay. Like, and right. When you're building a city from scratch, you want families who want to start businesses, but not just tech companies. You want someone who's got a laundrette. And you want someone who's got, you know, like, you know, all these kind of businesses. And your average digital nomad doesn't think like that. I don't think that, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. So as a result, the idea within our movement is that the real successful cities of the future will be the ones that offer locals a better standard of living. That's pretty much all it is.
I agree.
You know, so, and digital nomads don't really fit into that necessarily, but obviously how would you say they do then?
They do. For example, so I see this as a funnel. I explained this morning. So the funnel is, we have digital nomads. I say we attract 1,000 digital nomads. 100 will fall in love with the place and they want to stay there longer. They may even live there. Many will buy a house there. 25% more or less are entrepreneurs, so they may bring their business there. But more than that, they bring their knowledge there. So if there is a good integration, and this is the big if there is a good integration, the digital nomad will be able to bring knowledge besides bringing money. And actually, if there is a really good integration, they would actually move there. So digital nomads are very much transitioning always. And we start by traveling once a month to traveling once every 3 months to actually finding a place to stay and have a base. Why not Prosper as a base? Many people have now Madeira as a base. They stay there 6 months, 7 months a year, and then they travel the other 6-7 months. Why not? And they already brought money to Madeira. They pay taxes. They open companies. So it's a net positive. What's fun about this is that nobody in the nomad community knows about Prospera.
But also what they probably don't know and they'll find out is that Prospera will probably franchise, and that's the wrong word, will probably franchise the idea. And Prospera Africa, Prospera Southeast Asia. And then, I mean, I've already spoken to a few people at this conference who run that business model already, but in a completely different way. They're not independent jurisdictions, like the people are outside.
Yep.
They're buying properties, or they're leasing properties, or they're having relationships with people which have enough space for co-working, for places to rent long-term, this kind of stuff. It's the same business model. It's just Prospera is looking for regulatory autonomy, which is a much bigger ask, obviously, but it is happening. It's happened in Honduras. There are so many projects in various stages of the pipeline. I find it interesting, though, that you say that not many people know about Prospera. Here, at least, when people ask me where I'm from and I mention the Free Cities Foundation, I'd say slightly less than 50% of people have said Prospera. Nothing else.
Wow.
But that's here, right? These are people at a digital nomad summit.
And it's a mix of people, right? This is not just the digital nomad summit. This is digital nomad, free cities. There is a lot of different parts that Plumia is connecting. So Plumia is kind of trying to intersect all these different things into their vision. And I think they're correct.
Yeah. So that's interesting. Like, imagine this scenario then. Because it seems like it would be quite simple to take the model of Outside. Outside is, a company that basically creates infrastructure for digital nomads around the world. It would be quite easy to take that idea, build it in Prospera, and quite quickly have quite a large group of digital nomads there, would you say? Because the community is pretty well connected. When an idea gets out there, like I remember, you know, Lisbon, Porto, you know, when Porto became a place, suddenly whoosh, everyone's going there. Yeah. And there was an incentive, whether it be no cap gains on crypto or low taxes or just a lovely city or whatever. It happens quite quickly. Is that correct?
Yes. It doesn't need outside, though. Outside is a co-living space.
Sure. So outside will help. I mean, the model, the idea.
No, it's interesting because it's a flag. So outside came to Madeira to Ponta do Sol. Actually, they opened there after almost 1.5, 2 years of our project. They opened there.
Right. What so they were a result of...
They are legitimacy. So I'm building a village, so to say, and suddenly outside comes and invests. Like, that's good for me.
Yeah.
When we have travel groups coming, like Nomad Collective, and they come and they organize something there, it's good for me because it's bringing more people, but it's also one person that comes will speak with 30 people about it at least, right? And so it's that movement that Prosper is not doing inside our community at all. Like, what you're speaking is like the 1% here. I posted on my LinkedIn, I posted on my social media, nobody knew about Prospera.
Wow.
Nobody. And I was like, wow, no, I am a leader in this movement. You know, I didn't know about Prospera.
They already have co-living spaces there already in the Duna Tower.
But this is the dream. This is why the communication is not working. What Prospera is building is kind of a digital nomad dream to a new level. This is a dream. I did this project in Madeira. I wish I had built 10 buildings. I wish I had a Bitcoin school. I wish I could build my own school. I wish I have to do that, but I couldn't because I was building in a place that was built. Prosper is building from scratch. This is the nomad dream, ironically, being they are just focusing too much in their own space, in the network state, in the free city, in the crypto space. That's why nobody in my community knows about it. And the ones who know are very deep into the crypto community.
Well, they're only doing that, as far as I can tell, because that's what's been presented to them. Like the longevity people basically went there because they could use the regulatory framework. And as a result, now there's conferences about it. There's this about it. They're a free market. They're like... Come one, come all. If you can come and build, I mean, do you know about Morazan, the other free? Right, there's another ZA in Honduras called Morazan, which is a completely different model, and it's only local Hondurans. There's about 60 families there. I mean, they are building has stopped because of what's going on with the government, and it's all owned by one gentleman. A guy called Massimo, who's a lovely guy, and he basically rents out accommodation at a very low fee to people, local people, pretty much only. There's two expats that live there who are just kind of like slightly, you know, they just live there. But also, Morazan is never reported on by the people that come to talk about Prospera because it's very hard to, it's the wrong narrative. It's all Hondurans, local Hondurans who will basically lose their livelihoods if these things get banned. It's nothing to do with tech entrepreneurs and all this kind of stuff. But what was I going to say? Yeah, so that the model in Prospera is literally, we'll build a few things, but really, if you want to build a hospital, come and build one. Yeah. You know, like we'd love you to do this. It's like rather than in Morazan where it's like, no, here's the blueprint. I'm going to build it. I don't need your investment. Prospera needs, and it's just got another round of huge investment. So obviously, even what's going on with the government doesn't really seem to matter a huge amount to them.
That's our dream as a community. As a nomad community, we build co-living spaces in the most difficult places. Try to build a co-living place in Lisbon right now. It's massive. It's so hard.
Yeah.
Being in a place that not just wants us to go there, they want more residents, it's one of the goals. They want more people to visit, they want more people to stay there. It just makes sense to start with a nomad community. It just makes sense that they have a co-living space, outside or not. This, what they're building without knowing is the nomad dream. And also many nomads, 25%, we have companies, we are entrepreneurs. So they offer a way to register our company in a very nice way, in a beautiful place, with good taxes as well. Nobody knows about it.
I wonder what their view of that would be. Like, do you, I get the sense some people find, the digital nomads are coming as quite a risky proposition. Like I say, it's like striking a match. You get this super bright flame and then it dies down to nothing. You know, I don't know. Is that a bad characterization, do you think?
Yeah, if well done. The issue in places like Barcelona and Lisbon is that there was never a control. There was never a project. It was happened organically without any control, any data from the local governments. Zero. it was all an accident, all of it. So what we did in Madeira is we have data, so we could refute whatever you were talking about us. We have the numbers. And Prospera has the data as well. And so it's not like that. I wish it was like that. I will not have a job working with governments, but it's very, very hard to attract digital nomads to a place because we move between communities. It's not about your marketing campaign. It's not about your video. Do you have a community I want to belong to? That's the real question. Prospera has incredible people. Nobody knows who is there, at least, let's say, in public. Nobody knows who is there. I don't know who is building there. I don't know who is living there.
You don't?
No. Imagine if I went to see, if I go, so when we did Madeira, one of the biggest things we do on the Nomad side was showing who is coming, having interviews with people coming here, showing up.
How did you get people to go there, though?
I just posted on LinkedIn, honestly.
Really?
Yeah, the first 25 people I posted on LinkedIn, I was in the remote workspace.
Lovely place, cheap.
I'm building a community for us. I'm building a community from us to us. I'm building a nomad community from scratch. We have a free co-working space. We'll do events from day one. And if you care about community, this is the place that you should join from scratch.
Gosh, there's so much potential in Prospera. You haven't been there
exactly
yet,
no,
you?
I go in a couple of months.
It's got everything you could possibly need.
I know.
And also the opportunity to build what you haven't got quite quickly. The Duna Tower, because they have power over the regulatory framework, they don't have to wait months and months and months before they, you know, get the government to say you can't do this, and then they have to change the plans, and then they can choose the plans that suit the place.
It's a nomad entrepreneur dream, and we want to be with people like us. So right now the nomads are 25% entrepreneurs, 75% employees, more or less. The entrepreneurs want to hang out with other entrepreneurs. It just got more difficult because there are 75 employees. So many of us are builders. We want to build big things. A place like Prospera that attracts entrepreneurs by default, it's an incredible place in terms of community for us to be. But if you look for a video in any place you have in the nomad community, you'll see a day in the life in Madeira, a day in the life in Bali, whatever. You don't have that in Prospera. I was researching for 1 month. I still don't know how it is to live there. There is nothing like that. So if they want to attract people to leave, to stay, even for as a nomad for 2-3 months, the first thing I want to know, besides the accommodation that looks amazing, like nothing to say there, is who is there? Who will I meet? How is my day? Where is the gym? How do I do shopping? There is zero information about that. I'm researching. I'm going there soon. I am anxious. I'm going with my family. I have a baby daughter of 2 years old and my wife. I tell them, we need to go. This is incredible. Yet, when they ask me questions, where do we go shopping? It's like, I don't know. What is a day in the life there? I don't know. And those are the simple questions that anyone thinking about going there 2 months will ask. And if they don't have the information, they will just not go.
Well, and also it isn't necessary. It's not like Bali or Madeira. The island is lovely and that you can dive coral reefs off the beach. But yeah, the Prospera itself is, as you can imagine, a very early stage project. You know, you have to drive out of Prospera if you want to go and do anything, really. There are now things happening in Prospera, but I mean, I was about to say they don't seem to have a cohesive plan going forward, but they almost certainly do. That's me just not noticing it. But certainly from a PR perspective, I think it's fair to say there wasn't a cohesive plan from the beginning.
Even marketing, not just PR, we're talking about PR, more marketing wise.
Maybe they weren't wanting to market to digital nomads. I don't know. Maybe.
No, we are talking now. So as if they didn't, now they do.
Now they do. Sure, yeah. But that's what I mean. Back in the day, we imagine the process of thinking this thing up, getting the legal framework, getting this, getting that. You have ideas about what you think is going to happen. The truth is, I think probably people thought, well, look, if we go too far down the digital nomad route, we get labeled with being a colonialist nightmare. Because even though there are in the constitution, you have to employ at least X number of Hondurans, that, you know, like, and I think, who knows what was going through their minds? I mean, when you lay out the plan now and in terms in similar terms that happened in Madeira, I think, yeah, fuck yeah, do it. That's an obvious win-win for everyone.
I think operational, they did everything, like what they're building. Honestly, it's like, for me, it's so exciting to just find out about this now, because it's like, I wish I had that. And so I contacted them, they contacted me, we've been talking a lot, I will go there for 3 months. And for me, it's just like, wow, this is it. Like the thing I didn't have in any of my, because I work with the government, so I work with what I have there. I try not to build so this is not conflict of interests. I wish I had that anywhere. Like, give me a place that I can build from scratch and I can design it and I can attract entrepreneurs. I will have a party there because I know how to attract people. So my opinion is that Prospera is an incredible project. Logistically, operationally, they're doing a lot of incredible stuff I couldn't do at all. They miss the community side of things, in my opinion. They miss the marketing side because they don't fully understand who would be interested in moving there. They don't have that many people yet moving there. So my job is just not to attract digital nomads. It's to attract digital nomads, to attract people to move there, to attract companies. So I work with a whole funnel. When the government hires me, they want the digital nomads, but what they really want is the foreign direct investments, just like them. So they just, or they didn't understand, or they didn't have time, or the marketing team, whatever is planning that side for me, miss the big markets. And it's not just that, we make places famous. So they are now famous for the wrong reason. Tourism really follows digital nomads. If you look, Canggu was not a touristic place. Nomads went there. Now we are literally being kicked out by mass tourism. And so many of these places, they became trendy because the nomad community went there first. We built the infrastructure, like good cafes, co-working spaces. We make it beautiful. And the business is open for us. But then mass tourism comes, more money, dumb money, and they just destroy everything. They will never have that problem. Again, for us, it's like a dream. It's like, how the hell someone is building this and we don't know about it? This is how I feel after 5 years building in this community.
It's been there for so long already as well. It's funny. Yeah, it's funny. Crazy. I mean, it has, in their defense, it has only just in the last 2 or 3 years really started kicking off and building Duna Tower. But the, I don't know when I last went there. I think it was 3 years ago, 2 years ago. I can't remember. No, it must be. I started this podcast in Prospera.
Wow.
The first probably 10 interviews are with the mayor, with people from there, and we went to El Salvador as well, because it's very easy to get from there to El Salvador. You know that you can just fly straight there. So that, and this podcast has been going over 2 years now. So yeah, it was 2 years ago.
Yeah,
it's funny.
They did. Half of the job is incredible. What they did is incredibly done. Just miss the whole social side of it.
But all right, the community side is I get that now. But what you're talking about really is the digital nomad community. So maybe they had another community in mind, and they were, you know. But I don't know what that would be.
Like, probably the crypto community, but there is an overlap.
No, they were. No? I don't think they were.
I
think probably they were. I mean, look, we should probably ask them. But I haven't, you know, like I interview people from Prospera about once every few months, really, whenever I bump into them. But maybe it was more along the, okay, we've got these, and this is what it looks like to me. We've got these regulatory powers. So which businesses can we attract who are having a problem close by in America or wherever? It's too expensive to trial these new drugs. So, you know, we can offer them the regulations from Switzerland or something and they can use these and now they're fine. And it's easy for them to set up. So I would imagine that was probably the driving force. I can see, and actually now since being here, having listened to quite a few people talk about digital nomadism. Certainly, I don't know whether it's true or not, but you lot certainly believe that digital nomads pave the way for other things. You're like a first mover advantage. Have we got proof that that's true?
Everywhere. Like the Lisbon was not famous before digital nomads. Lisbon, there was an accident basically that digital nomads started to come into 2000.
Sorry to butt in, but has Lisbon's, you know, like, or but Lisbon's always been known about. I mean, I've known about Lisbon.
Heard about it. There was no tourists in 2014.
Really?
Yeah. What actually opened the tourism? Well, we started to come to Portugal, we, the Nomad Committee, in 2014-15. And around 16, tourism started to grow slowly and then just exploded 18. Before, you see no tourists. The city center was abandoned. I mean, I'm from Lisbon. I'm from the center of Lisbon. You wouldn't walk in the streets after 8 p.m.
Was that a lucky coincidence, or do you think that was the digital nomad?
No, it was not just us. It was, we helped, became trendy. We helped start businesses that then served the tourism community. It was the spring, the Arab Spring, that actually popped the whole thing. So we were slowly going there, more co-working spaces, more cafes, more infrastructure. Then the Arab Spring happens, and everybody that used to go to the North Africa suddenly is looking for a place. They found that there is a little corner in Europe called Portugal, and people start to come.
Yeah. And you, I take it, you think that Prospero would be something that digital nomads would enjoy.
100. Prospero is the digital nomad dream being built, not for them, ironically, but what they want to build is something that all the digital nomad entrepreneurs would like to be part of.
Wow. Well, Prospero, I hope you're listening. I know you are. Quite astonishing. Okay, let's. We're just about to hit an hour, and I want to keep this. We've got things to do, I know. What about some predictions for the future? Your talk here was very much a scathing attack on the current state of the digital nomad world. And I know you did it in good faith. You were joking in many ways. But, you know, tell me what's wrong about what's going on at the moment.
I think we just have a very fragmented movement. We have all these scattered people building for 10 people. We have co-living spaces with 7 rooms that are not connected with the community. We have community leaders in Portugal, Spain, Italy, Bali that don't speak with each other. So we are not building a movement right now. We are building millions of micro movements that don't have any leverage, that struggle economically, that struggle to get people because there is no actually way to target our community. So that brings many problems, accommodation, it brings problems in unity, it brings problems with PR. Nobody's defending, nobody's doing PR for nomads, so we are just attacked. And we need a better way. And for me, it's we need to unify the community. We need to build almost like a network state in a way. Ironically, I think we have the locations of the network state dream. We don't have the unified community.
Fascinating. And so, we're the other way around.
Totally the other way around. So we have the infrastructure locally, but we are not interconnected by anything. And it's a nightmare. So if we are attacked by the media, if this happens in Portugal, this is the case that I gave. I built the Portuguese Digital Nomad Association. I am the president. People call me first. Good journalists went to both sides of the story, always. If it happens globally, who do they call? There is no person. They may call me if they find something. They may call Lauren, but it's not obvious. So they just attack, and there is nothing to counterbalance it. So in terms of dealing with governments, in terms of negotiating, if you have a community of whatever, 30 million, they say, I think it's 1-2 million, that, to be realistic, we should have more leverage. We don't have leverage over anything. Governments build without knowing who we are. They build digital offices that doesn't really make sense for us. Nothing makes sense. We are this huge movement of forward-thinking people. We have huge impact in economies. We create jobs, we create businesses. We are global entrepreneurs. Yet nobody can actually talk with us because we are almost very individualistic and scattered around the world. There is no unity. So I think most of the problems we have right now is just this lack of a common structure, and we need to build it in the next 2 years, or else we're just a trend.
Is that what Plumia is?
In the beginning, yes. I don't think it is right now. I think they are changing into different ways. In the beginning, Plumia was created, as far as I know, as a network state. They wanted to become the first internet country for digital nomads. Then they are doing much more than that now. They're not so focused on the network state part of their project. They're more focused in connecting governments, helping governments with visas and everything. I'm not the right person to speak about Plumia, but it seems to me that they are more doing that work with governments.
But are you talking, so there isn't currently a digital nomads organization worldwide, so, HQ in Prospero or whatever.
Where, that would be cool.
Yeah, where you can, who do we call when we've got a digital nomad problem? It doesn't exist.
Yeah, like I
had not even people trying to do that.
Zero. So I had calls, because I'm someone in this space, I had calls with big companies, like big companies issue half of our cards, credit cards, and they are interested in the market. And they ask me, can you prove how many nomads you have in your community? Like, no. I have emails. I have 35,000 emails. That doesn't prove anything.
35,000 emails.
It's not a lot.
That's a lot.
It's for a company.
I know. I mean, I have an email list for my former business, and I know I could just press a button and make money, just like that. And that was nowhere near 35,000. You know.
Yeah, so, but let's say we are 1 million.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, imagine. I don't think
you can
we'll
take
have
that directly to governments.
Yeah.
Here we are. We are 1 million people. What can you offer us? I mean, our dream here. Your dream is some prosper. Our dream is governments competing for you as customers.
But they are. That's the thing. They are, but they don't know about you. All the governments are competing to attract talent, right? This is, if you don't attract talent, especially in Europe and North America, because the birth rates are so low, your attraction of foreign direct investment went from attract a big factory like it was before, because factory equals jobs. Now you have to attract people, because attracting a company doesn't equal jobs anymore. People can just work remotely from anywhere. And so now they have to attract the talent. So for the first time in history, all these government organizations that were targeting attracting the next Apple factory, they are actually now understanding they need to create strategies to attract people. And this is unique. And the job we do is actually, instead of starting by let move, for example, there is a great city, Tulsa in the US, have a great project to attract people, Tulsa Remote. And they now understood that it's very hard to convince people to just move there. So they added a layer, which is the digital nomad layer. So first they attract nomads, some nomads will fall in love with it, they will become residents. So digital nomads are like, I like town tasters. They go there, and if they love, they stay. If they love, they build there. If they love, they open a business. And you have these people town tasting 12 months a year that you can bring to your country, and some of them will fall in love. If you have a decent regulation, some of them will open a business there. If you have employees, some of them will hire your people. It's huge.
Yeah, I think on that point, I think I've had my mind changed on this trip, that maybe digital nomads are a first mover advantage for places. Like I say, my worry has always been, and I think it's true, is that people come and go. And actually, if you're trying to build something long term, you don't want digital nomads necessarily. But I think I agree now that it doesn't. You want everyone, but you want digital nomads as well.
It's a funnel.
You're right. I noticed a lot of people talking about funnels.
It's true.
I've got to do a speech tomorrow, and I've got no funnel.
What
to
do
talk
you mean?
About.
You need
I don't
a
do funnels. About four people talked about funnels.
Yeah, because it's easier to understand. It's like, yeah, if you have 1 million tourists and you have 100,000 digital nomads, and all that then attracts 1,000 residents, it just makes sense. It's literally conversion. And that's how I see it. And when I work with governments, this is how we see it. We cannot prove how many digital nomads start companies, but we can see the number of foreign residents from the countries we target as digital nomads just rising.
Question is, why haven't you started a nomad organization then? Or is that what NomadX is?
No, we're just consulting with governments. I think we will.
Yeah.
I will build.
Well, it sounds like you know the problem that needs solving. Like, why aren't you solving it? It's just like, you know, is it too big a prospect?
No, it's not. I think I am first working with governments. Like, working with Brazil is a whole thing. It's a huge country, and I work directly with Brazil.
Sorry, you better say what you're doing in Brazil currently.
So I work with the Rio de Janeiro, the city hall, to attract nomads and build a whole ecosystem with the tech. Their goal is to attract these nomads to grow their tech scene. They want to be the capital of tech of South America. And now I just signed a partnership with Embratur, which is like the tourism board of Brazil, to do the same for the whole Brazil. And I'm one person. So that keeps me very busy.
Blimey, yeah.
But definitely there is a world after this project where I want to build both of these things. I think we need both. I don't think it's one organization. I think we're talking about two different ones. I think one is kind of a nomad nation / community where we build all these, where we have people paying memberships, we have companies, and we integrate the governments. And this is one thing. And I think we need an NGO to have all the rest. And today people approached me about that. I had this conversation 1 year ago. It just very time consuming and resourceful wise, I'll not make money from an NGO, or I don't want to. So I need first probably to build the business to then build the NGO.
Is the Brazil, your Brazil project, is it going to be nomad villages, same kind of thing, or?
We have a mix, nomad villages and cities. So I started with a nomad village by my own, investing my own. It was Pipa, a surf town in northeast of Brazil near Natal. It's perfect. And there is still a lot of space to do and a lot of things to do. And now I'm doing Rio, which is the opposite. It's a huge city. It's crazy. It's my favorite place in the world, ironically. And we have a country that is huge, that is beautiful, that wants different projects, that wants international people. It's with the open arms to the world. So both, everything. If we can bring Prospera Brazil, we will. We can do anything. It's like, it's an open land right now. It's beautiful. And the government wants anything that attracts talented people from the outside.
The one you mentioned, what was it? Pipa.
Yeah,
Pipa. Is that a seaside coastal?
It's a surf town, yeah.
Wow. So, and presumably your idea is thousands of small nomad places, yeah. And that people will just
unified the thing. I can do that. It's not so hard. The issue, we have two issues. First, we are relying on the local ecosystem to build it instead of building ourselves. Ideally, we should have both. Ideally, we should go to people. For example, there is like 5,000 people. There's a lot of short-term tourism there. We should build our own thing for midterm. So we should, yes, have those, but have those plus this, or else it doesn't really work. Or we can build from scratch, but it takes time, blah, 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 everything takes more time. What cannot happen for this to be successful, in my opinion, is build with other people resources, which is what's happening. So I'm building in places where I don't own anything. So all the money, all the resources go for everyone except for myself and for the project. That worked as a government project. That was my goal as a government person working with the governments. It cannot be our goal as entrepreneurs. So if you really want to build this at a global scale, it needs to be also a business. We need to work with the governments. Don't get me wrong. I will always work top down. That's how I work. I work from the president all down to the local person. And this is the best way to work, in my opinion. So I know the president, I know the mayor, everybody agrees. Let's build something cool. Yeah, I think there is so much space to build both. I just never connected with the resources to build it as a private sector. And I think, Prospera has that I never had.
Yeah, 100%. And Pipa, the place you mentioned, is that the Madeira model?
Yes, but by myself. So I wanted to prove to everyone in South America that's not just Europe, that's possible to do in South America. Because Brazil has this reputation of being very dangerous, which is not true for Pipa, actually. You can walk around with your laptop in your hand, nothing will happen to you. And so I wanted to prove that Brazil is ready to welcome digital nomads. And this started by myself. I had this belief, Portuguese have a strong connection with Brazilians. And after I did that, I got lots of PR, lots of people. Then I received the calls from everyone else, from Rio, from Embratur, the City Tourism Board, the National Tourism Board. So now they understand what we can build there. And now it's much, much cooler.
And how many people are in Pipa? Have you got there? So
I have no infrastructure as a private business, which is a problem. We don't have an HQ like in Madeira. It's one of our defaults. We need investment there to make something really cool. But we have per year like 5,000-7,000 people coming through different projects, Noma Collective. We have our own. We did partnership with local accommodations. So they mostly come for 7 months a year, but it's not ideal yet.
Right. So in the first instance, you've basically just used the network to say, right, we're all going to this place.
Yeah.
And people are going there.
Yes.
And they like it.
They love it.
Right. It's just, yeah, Prospera is, they'll love Prospera, especially if they're entrepreneurs.
That's it. So we have, you need to build trust. You need to build your community. You build trust by saying the right things. Meaning if I tell everybody to go to a place and it's not good, it's on me. You lose trust very fast as well. But I build trust because I will never promote a place I don't believe in. I will never promote Rio if I don't think Rio is amazing, even with all the problems that it has. I will never promote Pipa if I don't think Pipa is amazing. So there is no money that can buy my trust. And that's my resource. That's why I have people that when I say something, people actually go and people trust me.
Why Pipa then? Why did you choose that place?
safe, Brazil, tropical, incredible weather, surf town, so there is many activities to do, incredible infrastructure, fast internet, cable internet, easy, you can walk everywhere, it's very walkable, it has accommodation, it's a lot of pousadas, it's just pousadas, so everything is a touristic village, so it's all pousadas, basically, so you have...
So what's a pousada?
Pousada, sorry, it's a guest house, kind of,
right,
but
okay.
With the you can only build in 30% of the land, so if you have... 10 by 10, you can only build on 30% of that. And so lots of nature, monkeys everywhere. It's really cool. So it's beautiful, has activities, has fast internet, has incredible restaurants. It's big enough to feel that you have an Italian restaurant, a Thai restaurant. It's small enough that you can walk everywhere.
Mm. Wow. Okay. Well, look, I mean, you know, there's never a better time than now to go to Prosper, I'd say. It's like they've got nothing to lose. I mean, you come, it's like, what's that scene in Fight Club right at the end? It's like, you've met me at a tumultuous time in my life. You've met Prosper at a tumultuous time in its life.
True.
But what's fascinating is, even with all that happening, it's moving ahead faster than normal, funnily enough. And maybe that's because people are like, I mean, the thing about Prosper is, when you find out about Prospera, as long as you do a deep dive to understand it, I even have a friend in the UK who's very famously left-wing, who used to rally against the place without realizing it, went to visit and changed his view over a period of a week when he actually thought about what's happening there and what it's doing and how good it is and what the benefits are for literally 99% of people. There are always going to be people that don't benefit in a situation like that. But really, it's hard to do a deep dive and decide that this is a bad thing. And, you know, we've been into the idea for a long time. Special economic zones are there's 6,000 of them around the world now. Countries are using them to boost their economies all over the place. Some work, some don't. But the idea will never die. And even if Prospera does have to change on account of the government, the actual idea behind it is still there, and it'll pop up somewhere else. And it is popping up in other places. There's lots of projects which are, you know, obviously you imagine you have to talk to governments about these things. It's not an easy ask to go in and say, look, hi, love your country, but I'd like to build something that you don't necessarily have complete control over.
Yeah, that one is hard. But if you think about building community first, it's much easier. If you go knock the doors of Brazil and say, well, there's this empty space next to the beach, nobody's there, can I build from scratch there? I would say half of the local governments would tell you yes, because they need jobs, because they need economic development, because government is limited in the resources they have. They are limited on the on how much and how fast they can implement things. So if there is a private investor that says, we can build here an incredible community, that will work. If you tell me we also need a special economic zone, that's much harder, of course. Mm. But it can be come together in some places.
Well, no, but this is the point. You know, I think there is the bottom up, build a city, and then get independence. And there is the approach from the independence, because this is a good thing for this city if we have independence. They both work, and plenty of people are doing it both ways at the moment. The goal in both ways is advantages for people that live there. Better standard of living, more freedom, more abilities to be entrepreneurial, you know, it's all good. It really is.
It's incredible. It is. I understand the people against it, but once you dig deep enough, and once you understand the economic impact, and once you understand how things move, and once you understand the number of jobs that you can create, you can literally make Roatan in 10 years one of the most incredible places in the world to be.
Well, like you said, when you were talking about the reasons why you had a massive backlash in Portugal, unfortunately, one political side doesn't like the idea. And you know why, because the ideology doesn't allow it. And unfortunately, that ideology is more collective than it is individuals. And if it doesn't necessarily like to see individuals succeed, it wants to see all individuals succeed in exactly the same amount, which is always far less. And actually, I meet people like that all around the world. It's a big hurdle to get over, to think that some people might just be doing well in isolation. Just
yeah. I'm from Portugal, man. It's, you're preaching to the choir. Portugal is like that. Portugal is anti-entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should not build a business in Portugal, ironically. And I wish that was, because my business is always in the US or is in Estonia, it's elsewhere. If you are an entrepreneur, people think you are stealing. That's the automatic thought. You are an entrepreneur, you must be stealing. Automatic. It's not like you must be giving jobs to people. It's not like we must be building something. No, you must be stealing. It's crazy.
Yeah. Anyway, Gonzalo, thanks for coming. I really, really sincerely hope that everything you're talking about happens, because, you know, I know the project well and I really can see a great advantage here. Like I say, I can't speak on behalf of Prospera, and maybe they look at that and go, actually, no, that's not what we want. But I can see pure benefit there for everyone. Win, win, win. And your idea that community should be focused on 100% makes absolute sense. And now, all right, it's probably much more difficult to insert that kind of idea into something that's already had 3 years of or more of of PR. But you know, we all, everyone I know, we're always rooting for Prospera because it's the project that it has the most attention and is the most cutting edge, other than maybe Morazan. But Morazan doesn't want to be in the limelight, quite rightly so. It's like they don't need investment, they don't need interest in it, they just want to provide good services for Honduras, you know. But so yeah, good luck with that, and thanks for chatting. And yeah, if there's anything we can do to help, obviously Free Cities Foundation, this is what we do, you know, you can you know, anyone you need to know, in that we know most of them. So beautiful. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for the invitation. It was super fun.